We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Folks, it is the Monday edition of College Sports Now. We're recording this on a Monday. It's going to drop on a Monday. Why?
Yep.
Because the coaching carousel continues to spin. He's Roddy Jones.
This is going to be outdated. Let me just tell you. This is going to be an outdated episode by the time we release it.
No, we're going to talk about it like it's happening. You've got inside information. We're going to discuss it. We're going to talk CFP. That's Michael Serber hanging out as well. Serbs, how was your weekend, my guy? You good?
It was good, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Good weekend. Sorry, I didn't have more for you there.
That's all right. No, that's okay. We'll talk Clemson football because y'all need a new defensive coordinator.
We need to talk a lot about Clemson. Oh, there's a lot to talk about with Clemson because I'm telling you, by the end of this episode, they might need a defensive coordinator, an athletic director, and might be well on the way to needing themselves an offensive coordinator too. There is a lot going on with Clemson.
Yeah, I'm hearing Tony Elliott to Duke maybe. Is that what you're hearing, Hot
So
Rod?
The reports are that he interviewed for Duke yesterday, which is Sunday, and he's interviewing for Virginia today, which is Monday.
I need to call a 30-second timeout here. Not to make this an ACC show. I have this on the rundown.
There's a lot going on in the league. Like, I mean,
can you explain to me, and we'll talk CFP and conference championship recap and all that stuff. Can you explain to me why Bronco Mendenhall was like, hey guys, I'm out. What's up with that?
I can not explain it any better than he did. Best way that I will explain it as I understand it. Bronco Mendenhall is a man that operates on very strong principles. He talks about it all the time. And for whatever reason, he felt like internally one of those principles was off with football, with coaching football at the collegiate level. And stepping back would allow him to refocus himself, realign those principles, reevaluate, and then, as he said, reinvent himself and come back. It sounds like he wants to come back, but he just needs some time away. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on in Bronco Mendenhall's personal life. I don't know what's going on in Bronco Mendenhall's head. But what I do know is that there were very few people in the ACC that were surprised that he did it.
Huh.
I talked to coaches, talked to administrators, talked to people in the league. Everyone's like, I mean, were we caught off guard by it? Sure, because you're always caught off guard by those things. But were we surprised that Bronco Mendenhall did that? No. Like, it kind of was always going to end this way for Bronco. He was going to wake up one week and be like, yeah, it doesn't feel right anymore. So,
as somebody who I've been doing the show with for a couple of years now, I appreciate you sharing that insight and that information with us. I thought we were in a nest here, in a trust tree. I thought you'd be able to kind of share that stuff with us. We've been doing the show together for a year.
What, that Bronco was going to step
hey,
away?
I'm I didn't know rumblings. That. I'm hearing that Charlottesville might be open.
No one heard the rumblings. There were no rumblings.
Unbelievable.
It was like a Bronco woke up on a Sunday, thought about it for like a week, and was like, yeah, it's the right thing to do. So I'm out. Look, nobody, but again, like, people weren't surprised because that's kind of how Bronco operates. Like, if the principles are off, it doesn't matter what it is. If it does not feel right to him, he will do the hard thing at all times and say, yeah, this is not right for me. It's not right for the way I want to operate my life. So I'm going to step away. Have fun. Thank you for this, but I'm out.
It's crazy. I mean, Virginia was a fun team this year, man. I thought he was building something
though?
There. It's not crazy if you're talking about quality of life. Hey,
right.
Man.
Exactly.
Like, I want to spend time with my family. Yeah, understood.
For our head coaches. Yeah. He's got two boys that are on missions. He's deeply involved in the Mormon. He's got two boys that are out on missions. His wife is deeply religious and in the church as well. So maybe there's something calling him there. I don't know. I don't. But I know there are things outside of football that are much bigger to Bronco.
I get
than
it.
Just football. And for our coaches, we don't often think about that. And we don't often consider the fact that, like, hey, these guys are people and sometimes football isn't their entire life. So I actually don't think it's that weird. I think it's very normal to do. Like, a guy gets burnt out on a job, he's like, yeah, I'm a millionaire, so I'm gonna step away.
Yeah, that first part I can certainly relate to. I'm sure Serber can as well. The second part, not so much. Yeah, I mean,
you're not making...
No.
Come on, man.
Bro, we work in radio and podcasting.
Learfield, come on.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, Learfield, come on. But yeah, it ain't popping off like that, like it is for Bronco, who's hanging out on the ranch. Anyway, I didn't want to lead the show with that. I just, of all the news that broke over the weekend, I found that to be a bit of a head scratcher. So I knew I'd have you on. We'd talk ACC stuff, and I'd ping you on the vacancy in
it is a very interesting job too. Because as exciting as Virginia was, they were 6-6 team this year.
Yep.
So they need to be rebuilt on the defensive side of the football. They need to get more athletic on that side of the ball. They've got a star in Brennan Armstrong if he does indeed decide to come back. They've got talent. Broncos figured out a way to get pieces there that fit. I'm curious if Virginia, because I think if I'm Virginia, you don't want to change a whole lot in all honesty. Like, this is a competitive football team. It's built the right way. Look, on the defensive side of the football, you may have to make some changes. And there have been rumblings that he was asked to make some defensive changes. I don't know if that's true, but there have been rumblings about that. But what I do know is that, like, Bronco did fit Virginia. They have a very particular style of head coach that they have. You look at Brian O'Connor in baseball, Tony Bennett in basketball, what was Bronco Mendenhall. Like, they were kind of cut from the same cloth. Lars Tiffany in lacrosse.
Wow.
Like, they're all kind of cut from the same cloth. It's very well-rounded, very worldly type of head coach.
Way to work a lacrosse reference into the show. While we're on the subject, though, not of lacrosse, of coaching, can we talk about this love triangle going on between Miami, Oregon, and one Mario Cristobal?
Is it a triangle of love?
I think... Well, we're recording the show, you know, going up until about 11 a.m. Eastern time, and that is when there's supposed to be a formal announcement, is my understanding, out of South Florida, that Cristobal's coming.
So they gave Mario Cristobal a noon deadline to decide whether or not he was going to take the Miami job or not. Which, can we just talk about... Hold on, I'm trying to earn the E here.
Okay, listen, you say what you feel, man. I have takes on this too, but you say how you feel.
Can we talk about how fucked up this is?
Wow. Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead. Fire away. Like, because of Manny Diaz and the fact that he's currently employed?
They have a sitting head coach
right,
who's out there trying to recruit. They don't have the balls to fire him and go after a guy. Instead, because there is mutual interest between the guy and the school, they just go after they go, hey, Mario, you going to come or not? I mean, Manny, like, we're good if he doesn't come, but Mario, you coming or not?
Well,
like, I have played this game before. I have. When I was like 15, when I had my girlfriend, and then I had the girl that I was trying to get with, and I was like, look, we're good. Like, we can cuddle, like, and hug each other still in the hallway because we're boyfriend, girlfriend. But, like, if she wants to be my girlfriend, then we're not going to be boyfriend, girlfriend anymore. But until then, we're good. Like, We're good. All right. It didn't work. Even I ended up with nobody.
Shocker. Here's my thing, man. You talk about they being the University of Miami. Listen, we've all been in a place where we've had a bad boss at work. There is no boss at Miami right now. There's no athletic director.
And that's the other thing. Like, it's an institution that's doing this. It is the president of the university that is supporting this. They don't, as you said, they don't have an athletic director because they're not going to hire that guy until after they hire the head coach, which in and of itself is like completely backwards, right?
So why is Mario doing this then? Because it's home?
Here was a direct quote that I had from somebody in South Florida when I had their game. Okay. Mario could have every, this isn't the direct quote. I'll tell you when we get the direct quote part. Mario could have every conceivable advantage at Oregon. Mario could have everything set up to win a national championship. Mario could have more money over there, which apparently he won't. Miami's getting close to doubling his salary. But, and here's the quote. Cubans need their mothers. That was the quote from a guy in South Florida who is Cuban. He's like, look, man, like, it's how we work. Like, we work with our moms. That's it. His mom's in South Florida, bro. His family's in South Florida. It's home. There's obviously an emotional connection to the place. But I think more than that, there's a familial connection. He's got kids. He's got a wife. And there's got to be the draw of like, man, I can go coach at the place where I want two national championships and be near my family. Like, my mom can see my kids, my wife. I think his wife's from down there too, if I'm not mistaken. But even so, like, my wife can be around my family. Like, it's a hell of a draw.
It's
a hell of a draw.
Yeah, look, I get it. Is Miami a better job than Oregon?
No.
No, it's not. No, it's
Miami
not.
Miami was a microwave dynasty.
I like that.
And it's like,
did you come up with that?
Determined.
Microwave dynasty?
No, a Miami guy said that. Miami guy said that.
I like that.
They were. In 20 years, they won 5 national championships. They were nothing before, and they've been nothing after. So, like, we popped it in there, we popped it in there, put it on 20 years. They had one of the most incredible runs in college football history. And you know, Serber, go ahead and say it.
What am I supposed to say?
It's your time to say trash.
Trash. Oh, sorry. You were kind of breaking up there.
Your kids streaming Paw Patrol, the movie,
no,
on Paramount Plus right now?
Are you playing, sorry, FIFA? Really... Are you playing FIFA online as you do this show?
Roddy, are you working on your Animal Crossing Island as we play? Like, or as we record?
I'm talking about... Roddy, are you on dial-up?
Dial-up.
Dude, do you still have
an AOL free disk?
Bro, is it true that you still use Prodigy for your email address?
The hell is Prodigy?
You don't remember Prodigy? Yeah, you young, man. Y'all babies.
At Rocket Mail address, I thought? I thought he was at
Rocket Mail.
Yo, Roddy, for real, are you downloading stuff on LimeWire right now?
No.
Roddy,
not.
Do you use Yahoo as your main search engine?
Yeah.
Sometimes they do sneak it in there on me.
Roddy,
next thing I know, when I Google it.
Are you using BitTorrent to download soundboard recordings from the early 70s?
Now that was legit. That was awesome.
Roddy, are you on Nugs.net?
What is Nugs.net?
Come on, man, do better, man. It's like a hub for live music. No,
right,
in all
I'm
seriousness,
running my speed test right now.
Your internet's a little jacked up right now, man. Are you guys going through some storms right now in Metro Atlanta?
Look, I'm flying. My download speed's in the 550s. My upload speed's probably in like the high 100s. Like,
it is
I'm
upload.
Flying
that,
right
it's
now.
Upload that matters. Just so you know.
Well, download goes first, Steven.
Just saying. All right, for what
checking
we need,
the upload speed. I am flying. Like, I'm at 580 right now, and an upload speed 602. I'm up to 605.
I think those numbers are inflated, man.
Yeah,
609.
Quit with the math, Georgia Tech nerd.
612. 613.42 is my upload speed. Faster than my download speed.
Right.
Now I did just plug in my dongle, so now I'm hardwired.
Seriously, come on, man. Like, what? This is a national.
What?
Why is the dongle not plugged in 20 minutes
I forgot.
Ago?
I forgot. What do you want from me?
There's a lot of stuff.
I have to plug in the microphone. I got to plug in the headphones. I got to, you know, click on the Zoom. I got to click on the clean feed. There's a lot of stuff that needs a lot of moving parts. I got to have these takes ready to go.
Listen. I know championship weekend is come and gone, but it's December. I drove home from Atlanta on Sunday. I heard you ACC Network analyst give multiple takes on the CFP, even though the ACC hasn't sniffed the CFP since about September.
I'm an ESPN college football analyst.
I understand that. But everybody wanted Roddy Jones' CFP takes, man. So I just bring that same level of excellency to this podcast. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm asking. Plug the dongle in next time.
I'll do better. I'll make sure my dongle stays in.
Thank you.
All right. So the Miami Cristobal thing, like in terms of the search, I just think it's completely it's just messed up, man. Like to conduct a very public search. By the way, like not only are they doing this, they're basically doing it in the public.
That's right.
Like that place has more leaks than Watergate, you know? Like it's unreal. It's unreal how many leaks that place has. We've been a part of this every step of the way. Every single step. When you transpose that against the fact that nobody knew about Brian Kelly to LSU or Lincoln Riley to USC until it happened. Right. Well, Brian Kelly the night before, he had to send out that text message, but you know.
Yeah, look, it's going to happen. It hasn't happened as of the moment we're taping the show, but it sounds like by the time
I don't know that it's going to happen. Like, Miami people are equally confident and terrified right now. And I follow a bunch of somehow I've kind of gotten in with a bunch of them. Like, I talk to them all the time. Like, they're like, yeah, he's definitely going to come unless he gets cold feet and doesn't. And then you're like, is he going to do that? And they're like, it's not a thing that he hasn't done before. So
he's also probably looking at Oregon's schedule for next year and realizes that they got to open up with Georgia in Atlanta week one.
He's also looking at the fact that USC is about to suck up his entire recruiting pipeline.
That's a thing. Yeah, that's a thing. I find it fascinating. Again, like it just kind of continues to kind of do its thing. But this year it's been wild. The coaching carousel has been, maybe it's because this is 2 years in one. Like I've heard that before, because of what we were dealing with last year with COVID.
I don't think that's the entirety of it. Like for some of these job openings, I would say yes. Like USC, for example, that's a 2 year in one thing.
Sure.
You know, some of these, like, I mean, TCU, maybe, you know, that could be thrown in there. Texas Tech almost certainly could be thrown in there. The Bronco Mendenhall thing, like, I think that one's different. I think Lincoln Riley moving and creating an opening in Oklahoma Venables is going to take. I don't think that's a 2 years in one thing. I think that's a what has happened. Like, Oklahoma's going to the SEC, and Lincoln's looking around like, bro, I didn't sign up for this. I signed up to be in a conference where I have every conceivable advantage. All I got to do is win in the CFP. Like, I want that. So I'm going to USC. So I don't know. But it brings us full circle, if I can, to Clemson. Because, like, Dan Radakovich is probably going to Miami, too. I've seen better than a 50-50 shot. And now one of the powerhouses in college football has more instability than it has had in at least a decade, because you're replacing a defensive coordinator that's been there since 2011. You're replacing an athletic director. When did D-Rad get there, Server? Do you know? Like 12 or 13?
It was.
He got there. I can tell you exactly when he got there. It was sometime in between 11 and 12, because I had just gotten done and was on the search committee for the next Georgia Tech athletic director. And he was there my entire time. So I got done at 11. It was probably sometime in 12, maybe early 13 that he left. But
nice flex, by the way, Roddy. Nice flex.
What?
Search committee, Georgia Tech athletics director.
Didn't say it was successful when we hired Mike Babinski, so.
Wow.
What?
No, it's great. Honesty. What? Love it.
So now Clemson's going to have to figure out a lot, and I think it could change the landscape of college football. Like, Dabo, an X's and O's guy. He could lose his defense. He lost his defensive coordinator. Could lose his offensive coordinator. They're coming off of a different year, a lesser year where they're not in the college football playoff. It's just interesting, man. Oh, and by the way, Florida State has an athletic director opening that they're apparently going to go to Louisville and still the Louisville athletic director, Vince Tyree. So there you go.
Cerber, how are you feeling about all this change with your beloved Tigers?
The Venables one hurts, right? Because I don't think he's replaceable. Like, I don't think he's replaceable, obviously, but he's not. You're not going to get anyone as good as him to take his place, because he's proven over the past 7-8 seasons that he's the best defensive coordinator in the country. I think. given the way he was able to shut down Alabama, just the success he's had against high-powered offenses like Oklahoma in the college football playoff, the consistency with which that defense is constantly in the top 20, regardless of whether or not there's turnover. He's put some really young defenses out there that still were top 20 defenses. So that one's tough. I think you probably go inside higher there. There's a lot of guys on staff.
I don't think so, man.
You don't think Mike Reed is a good option at defensive coordinator?
I don't know. I've never seen Mike Reed call a defensive play. I know he's been at the knee of Brent Venables.
Good, I mean, I think the DBs have been developed well at Clemson since he took over.
Yeah, they've been insanely talented at that position, too.
Yeah, they have. But they've been insanely talented at every position. So you can't really say, oh, the position coaches haven't done well. You know, the one I'm calling out would probably be the offensive line, which also wasn't insanely talented.
So. Like linebacker, they are not insane linebacker. They're good, but like unless you count Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, you know, they've had some guys come through, though. Stephon Anthony was a really good linebacker.
Stephon Jamie Anthony Scull. Got done in like 12.
Right, sure. thank you. But, you know, regardless, that's Brent Venables' job, so maybe Oklahoma's getting a dud.
Exactly. No. They've had really, really good linebackers, college linebackers. They were not insanely talented. So I guess the point that I was trying to make is like that was Brent Venables' position, and he did a great job of coaching those guys up because they are very good, but they're not overly like they're not freaky athletes like the safeties and corners have been.
Sure. On the offensive side of the ball, there's a couple different options, right? Like. Brandon Streeter, the passing game coordinator, or became passing coordinator this season. Maybe he's the fit for offensive coordinator. Dabo's gone, you know, inside higher on that one since Chad Morris left. Chad Morris is available. I don't know what the working relationship is like between Dabo and Chad following his exit for SMU several years back. Wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have him come in. That being said, Clemson's offense was better after Chad Morris left. Willie Korn down at Coastal Carolina. He's a Clemson guy. Was supposed to be a superstar for Clemson at quarterback. Unfortunately, the timing wasn't there. He had some injuries, and then you know Tommy Bowden got
Kyle Parker.
He got canned. Willie came in and started for Colin Harper one game, got banged up, and then Kyle Parker came in the next year. Willie Korn wasn't on the team very much longer after that. So, I mean, there's options of the offensive coordinator that I think could be an upgrade. Because, I think Chad Morris or Willie Korn is an upgrade at the offensive coordinator position. Potentially Brandon Streeter is, too, given the success he had at Richmond as an OC. If he's able to duplicate that at Clemson, he could be an upgrade over Tony Elliott. I don't want to disrespect an extremely intelligent offensive mind like Elliott, but results were wanting after Scott left the co-OC position. So, and then at the athletic director position, I mean, there's who knows, right? Like, who knows who could get that job? I'd be interested to see if an inside guy has a shot at I don't know, man. Roddy, you tell me. Is Jeff Davis like an athletic director candidate? Former Clemson player. He's been on the administrative side of things. Isn't he in charge of Paul Journey for them?
Yeah, I would imagine.
I don't know if like there's an inside guy. If there's a Clemson guy. I think maybe he's it, but you know who knows who they go for at AD.
The thing with these AD hires is, first off, I have no sense or idea or clue like how to project on who's going to be a good AD anywhere. I have no idea. Yeah. Like I just don't. But what I will tell you is that Dan Radakovich, if it is indeed true, it's not confirmed yet. He hasn't signed, so if he does indeed leave, he provided them with an alignment that was perfect for the timing of when he got there. With the vision of where Ipte was going to go, it perfectly coincided with how they were getting good at the time. With his vision of facilities and the ability to get that done, it perfectly coincided with not only Dabo's ascent and his vision for what Clemson could be, but also Clemson's vision of adding sports. They added softball and got very good at it very quickly. They have added two other sports that are starting in the next few years. I believe it's women's lacrosse and gymnastics. There's no reason to think that they're not going to be good at those. He also brought Clemson to a place where they are considered on the same level as the SEC schools in terms of assistance pool. Like, he's paying Brent Venables $2.5 million while he's paying Dabo $9 million, while he's paying Tony Elliott over $1 million.
Right.
Like, that's Dabo. I mean, that's Dan Radakovich that did that. So having someone with that same vision for the next 15 years, which are going to be a crucial 15 years for Clemson in terms of staying nationally relevant, so that you're not left behind by the year 2035, is incredibly important, because Clemson's a brand that has value, and you have to keep that value until the ACC's network, the ACC's contract with ESPN is up, so that you are still desirable to the Big Ten or the SEC. Because at that point, who knows where we'll be, but I know those two leagues will exist. They will be making more money than everybody else, and Clemson has to position itself to be ready when they come calling and they are ready to pay that buyout. And if you're not good, it's not going to happen.
That's good stuff. Again, Brent Venables formally announced, or I don't think the press conference has happened, but over the weekend, he's headed to Oklahoma. I don't know how that's going to go, man. Like, as a head coach of the Sooners, just real quick. Here's the thing. I've never been in a room. I've never been in a room with Venables, but I've talked to people who have. The word psychopath has come up a few times.
It's a fair description. And I won't say psychopath. He's just like, he is wild, man.
Okay.
Like,
he's so wild. He's got the, you know, we've all seen the pictures, the get back guy. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's double hands on hips. Here's the thing. If I'm an Oklahoma fan, you lost a prodigy, right? Like, an offensive prodigy. And you've got a defensive coordinator, a lifer. He's got Oklahoma roots. He's been there before. Great. Awesome. But I still think Oklahoma's fan base, Roddy, and these are different arguments, right? Like, the fan base isn't making the hire. It's Joe Castiglione, the AD.
But who's one of the best ADs in the country.
Yep, sure. Unquestionable. That's still a fan base that expects to go out there and hang 50 on people. So we've seen
they
this.
They wanted BV, though.
Listen.
They got what they wanted. Yeah.
Okay, like, that's
and
fine.
And he can go and hire.
Twitter,
he'll have the
no
money.
Other name.
I've seen
he'll
this.
Have the money to hire a hotshot coordinator.
Cool.
Zach Kittley.
I've seen this at other places, most notably Florida. Like, it's still a fan base that's stuck in a pat. It's a fan base that expects to be able to go out and do whatever they want on offense. So if you're winning games 17-10, which may be the future of Oklahoma football in the next couple of years, I'm just saying, like, it's a 180 from where you've been. That's all.
That's a fair point. 2 points on it, though. Number one, like, I don't know if he's going to call plays on defense. He probably doesn't even know that yet. But he can go out, and he will have the money and the resources, and that place will give you the ability to go get the best offensive coordinator in the country that he can get. By the way, Joe Brady is now available.
Yeah, how about that? Hashtag keep pounding. Keep pounding, like, Panthers.
I thought – so everyone's been talking about Ed Orgeron as,
clowns,
like, this one-year one-hit wonder, like, one-year deal. Like, we're not having that conversation about Joe Brady, so we probably should.
Yeah, but Joe Brady had freaking, like – what's the former Temple quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater at Carolina?
He went to Louisville.
As opposed to Joe Burrow.
He went to Louisville and was a first-round pick.
What are you talking about?
You said Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, no, they had – but the other guy they had was a Temple quarterback, P.J. Walker. I wasn't saying was a Temple quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
P.J. Walker was a Temple quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater was a quarterback there. Like, Sam
But
Darnold.
he got fired, man. Like,
yeah, he got fired, but, like, what have they given him to work with? A like, one-legged Christian McCaffrey?
So,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. But
Cam Newton, whose back has been broken in a car accident, and, you know, like, I just...
But, like, they know what they've given him, and then they also fired him midseason, so there's something off there. Like, there's something not right about
it. I'm not ready to bury Brady. I'm not ready to bury Brady based on what happened with the Carolina Panthers.
I am
one of the
number
worst
one,
franchises in the NFL.
You took the Carolina Panthers job, so I can question your judgment there, Joe Brady. Number two, you got they knew what they give him. If I give you poor ingredients and you make a poor dish, that's fine because I gave you poor. For you to do something for me to fire you, either I think you ingredients than the thing you're putting out, or I just don't like the way you work. Like, I don't think you're that good.
Right.
Because if they thought he was that good, they'd have kept him no matter what. I'm not saying because they were bad, good, whatever. Like, if they thought he was that good, they'd have kept him. And I think Matt Rhule has pretty decent judgment on people. I don't know why. Honestly, I don't
Panthers
know how Matt Rhule got
on
the
people,
job.
Dude.
That's fair.
Panthers, he's got too much Panthers on him.
It's that city.
I want to go back to Oklahoma, though, because this is a school that is used to a certain level of success. Not counting COVID, how many years since the year 2000 have they had less than 10 wins? Not counting the COVID year.
One or two? Three? Maybe?
Three.
Okay.
8-5 in 2014, 8-5 in 2009, 8-4 in 2005.
Yeah.
17 of 20 years they've had over 10 wins. When they go to the Southeastern Conference, ain't going to be like that, bro.
Yeah.
Because you're going to pull a year where you get Bama and Georgia in the same year. And then you got to run the table the rest of the way. You're going to pull a year where you got to go to Death Valley and go to the Swamp in back-to-back weeks and then get Alabama at home in late November. Well, actually not in late November because that's when everybody in the SEC has their bye week. So in early November. Like, you're going to pull one of those years.
Maybe not anymore when they go to 9 games. That bye week may go away. Games,
bro.
They got to get there
16 team conference is going to play 8 games.
They have to formally announce that that's happening. I get what you're saying, Server. But
look, I agree with you. I think they should. I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it.
That's only one cross division opponent per season.
They're not.
So, like,
they're not
they
staying.
Will...
You can't stay in divisions. They're not staying in divisions.
We don't
you
know that.
So if you're yes, you do, bro. Think about it for 2 seconds.
You're bringing Oklahoma and Texas
into the league. You're going to flip Alabama and Auburn to the East and have Oklahoma and Texas play Alabama and Auburn once in a blue moon? Absolutely not. Your sole goal for the first like 10 years of the league is to get Oklahoma and Texas on every campus multiple times. And the only way that can be accomplished is by going to pods. So I don't think there's any way they stay in divisions. It would be a complete, utter, and total disaster. You need to get Texas, Alabama, Oklahoma, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, like some mass, Tennessee, some massive fan bases and names on that side that are going to be better than, no offense to Tusk, but going to be better than them going to Arkansas.
Offense taken. This is a good segue to talk about what actually happened on the field in the SEC instead of what we think the model of the conference looks like in 3 years. Although that is a fascinating discussion that I am here for. Roddy, championship Saturday, you were in Charlotte, right? You saw the game, Pitt Wake. I was in Atlanta. I saw Bama and Georgia. We all watched these games on TV. Yeah, there was no drama on Sunday, but we were at, 6 inches away from there being some significant drama? If Oklahoma State reaches the pylon... Yeah.
How good a play is that, though, by the Baylor kid?
How bad of a play is that by the Oklahoma State running back?
No, it's a terrible play by, the running back. Like, cut it upfield, bro. Why are you trying to out-sprint him?
Bro, okay.
Put your shoulder into him and fall into the end zone.
Roddy, so, you're not wrong. Great defensive play.
Thank you.
From a former...
Can we celebrate? Okay. Can we celebrate an incredible defensive play before we bury the Oklahoma State running back?
Talk to me, former Georgia Tech tailback, 4th-and-1, CFP on the line. You gonna bounce it out and try to reach the pylon when you need 3 inches?
Well, it's designed to go outside.
Okay,
first and foremost.
That far
to the pylon,
yeah.
To the near side.
Didn't they pitch it to the dude, like, or did he bounce it? I can't remember. Was it a handoff or they pitched it to him? I'm pretty sure they pitched
it to him.
Yeah, regardless, it was a drama free Sunday, but it wasn't exactly a drama free Saturday.
But here's the thing. I want to defend the running back
handoff.
In that position. It was a handoff? Okay.
Handoff from the near side, or excuse me, from the far side. He cut it all the way to the near side of the pylon.
So I want to defend the running back in this scenario because in your mind, all I have to do is touch the pylon. Let me beat him to the pylon. And if you have a choice between that and trying to take on a guy to get to the end zone, you are always going to choose that. It's easy for us to say based on how it goes that he should have taken the guy on. But if he Michael Penixes it against Penn State,
transfer
then
portal.
We're not having this conversation.
Penix portal, by the way. Look, I'm going to defend the Oklahoma State running back too. You know why? Because Spencer Sanders threw 4 picks.
Yeah, there you go.
Four. The bad Spencer Sanders showed up. The 2019 Spencer Sanders showed up.
The Spencer Sanders that shows up every time they play Baylor, because they turned the ball over three times against the against it early on. I mean, against them in the first matchup.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Baylor beats Oklahoma State 21-16. That's the early game. And then at 4 o'clock, I watched zero of Cincinnati Houston.
Okay? Oh, and the other thing, and the other thing, too, is when he bounces this thing, his shoulders are completely perpendicular to the line of scrimmage. That's no position. You have no power there. And he's on, like, the 5, like, when he would have turned it up and taken the guy on. All the guy has to do is grab his shoulder and fall. And you're, like, now leaning over trying to drag a guy in the end zone. So, no, he made the right decision. It's a foot race to the pylon. He lost the foot race. Like, maybe at the very end, you press into the guy when you get close and try and get in the end zone. But, again, like, that happens on the 3-yard line. Like, the dive is what got him close to the pylon. His feet were on, like, the 2. So, if you're going to drive into a guy, you're having to carry a dead weight of a man 6 feet off balance when you're sprinting. So I completely defend his decision to try and outrun him to the pylon, because in that scenario, it is so hard to go from a dead sprint, like running away from a guy, to all of a sudden decide, all right, I'm going to press into the guy and have the confidence and the strength to carry him for like 10 feet.
Yeah. By the way, Baylor, nice season, 11-2. Very good. Enjoy the Sugar Bowl. Nice. Very good. But, man, Oklahoma State, had
so
they won
rude.
That.
They had 2 wins last year.
Had they won.
And it's like, oh, nice win. Enjoy
nice
the
win.
Sugar Bowl.
Enjoy the Sugar Bowl. Suck.
You know, I'm going to go full Wayne Cook on you, because Sugar Bowls matter, Steven. Conference championships matter.
I'm not poo-pooing Baylor at all. Big Dave Aranda fan.
Seemed like you were.
We had J-Mo on the show last week, voice of the Bears.
I think this is your bias showing in itself, Roddy. You're just assuming mm-hmm. that he's poo-pooing it.
Correct.
You
look, I wore green today. I'm all in. Yeah. Let's go.
I didn't assume it. I mean, it's a very pejorative tone there. Oh, Baylor, nice job. Enjoy the Sugar Bowl.
You want to get pejorative? We can talk about the SEC championship game.
Okay, let's do that.
Again, full disclaimer. I didn't see any of Houston and Cincinnati. So y'all are going to have to help me out there. Bearcats are in at 4. By the way,
nobody watched that game.
We're 45 minutes into the show. Alabama versus Cincy, Michigan versus Georgia. That, if you've been living under a rock, if you're in a cave and you rely on this show to tell you what's going on with college football, sorry we buried the lead there.
How are you living your life then?
Hey, listen, man, you never know. I mean, don't.
I mean, thank you.
You know, but Liz Hartzell ain't watching SportsCenter every day, man. She, like, this is how she
is
finds
Liz Hartzell
out.
Listening to the show?
Oh, come on. Yes. Are you kidding? Liz Hartzell is a huge fan of college sports now. Right. Huge fan.
So Stephen Hartzell is very supported by his family.
She's given me love feedback.
Brother listens. Mom
she's given
listens.
Me feedback on my co-hosts.
I don't
all right.
Anybody
we'll
in
save
the world.
That for the box
what
set.
What she said about me.
No. We're saving that for the box set. We're not putting that out for public consumption. Yeah. All right. I love all of you. It's like you're like my children. I don't
Who's
have favorites. We don't play favorites here. That's my
That's
point.
Not true.
You're all
That's
special yeah. individual cases. She's a big server fan. Big server fan.
Looking.
She's never actually she has met Wayne went in Atlanta for the CFP a couple years ago.
Of course
That's
Wayne.
Besides the point. Alabama Georgia game of the day going into it.
Probably Felder too because he does the food stuff.
I will say that game was probably 75-25.
Famous.
75-25. It was a pro Georgia fan base.
Yeah, I'm definitely 4.
Hey, but you're in the playoff, Roddy.
I am top four. What were you saying?
You got to play Wayne in the Peach Bowl. That's the only
I'm getting blasted. I'm just Cincinnati. I'm just happy to be here.
Roddy, as a Georgia Tech alum who lives in Metro Atlanta, who saw Georgia lose for the first time in almost a year and a half, was there some joy that you derived from watching that thing play out?
No. Like, look, I root against Georgia, like, in principle and in theory, but I like greatness, man. Like, I like to see greatness be great.
We saw greatness. We saw
it. I don't care where it comes from.
He was running around wearing a number nine.
I don't care where it comes from. So to see Georgia not be able to finish the drill, as they used to say, was disappointing. Like, I was disappointed in them because we have seen, we saw LSU in 2019. We saw Alabama last year. And I thought we were in line to see another one of those. And I wasn't going to be against it. Like, because was I going to not be super pumped because Georgia fans are going to bark at me in the street randomly? Yeah, that, I could do without that. Like, I could do without the mouth breathers coming out. Like, I could do without that. But at the end of the day, like, seeing that Georgia defense complete what they had done the entire year would have been a really cool thing that we would have talked about for years. Instead, we will talk about what Bryce Young did for years, because he was incredible in that football game. The offensive line did a much better job, and by much better, I mean they did their job, which was keep Bryce Young mostly clean. But even Georgia had opportunities to sack Bryce Young, and they couldn't do it. He either got the ball away or was able to scramble and then throw the ball downfield. And then Georgia hasn't really played a team that could take advantage of a mistake that they made. They don't make a ton of them, but they're like everybody. They make some. Jameson Williams can do that.
Woo!
You're at a position, he's just got to catch the ball on the run, and like you can strike up the band. That's literally a guy who catches it on the opposite 40. Guys have angles, but there's a lane. Go ahead, strike up the band. Mm-hmm. Eli Gold, touchdown Alabama. Eli, he's still in the 30. I said touchdown Alabama. You know why? Because ain't nobody catching that dude, man. Nobody.
Yep. You know how many sacks Georgia had on Saturday?
Zero.
Yeah. And that's
zero.
And that's on the heels of an Iron Bowl when Alabama's offensive line looked awful.
Alabama gave up, I believe, 7 sacks in that game.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
And like that would Alabama just like, and here's the whole argument for Alabama at number one, or why Alabama shouldn't have been number one. And I'll ask you this. Like, did you have Alabama at one? Did you think they should be at one?
Yeah.
Okay.
They beat one.
So? Michigan beat two in the same way, basically. Like, exactly as dominant.
Yeah, I had no problem with it at all. None.
I didn't have a big problem with it.
Now, as somebody
but it goes, it goes to the go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, isn't there a trickle down effect here because of how? Now, again, I don't want to speak for the committee because you've been in that room, you've done the mock stuff. But if you're putting Alabama at two, that's my point.
No, because you can't look me in the eyes and tell me that Georgia's worse than Cincinnati. Like, you can't convince me of that.
Right.
So, which, like, I'm not super mad about it, but if you look at what Alabama did against Georgia, that is the best team in the country. How many times have we seen that the past month?
From Alabama?
Once.
Right.
This is a team that rushed for 7 yards against LSU. It's a team that was in a 1-score game against Arkansas and should have lost to Auburn. They're lucky they had East-West nobody, Morehead State or somebody, like New Mexico State. In that November, because like every game they played in November was close, and none of the teams were good that they played in November. So that was my argument for Michigan at one, because look, Alabama's got the best win in the country. That win over Georgia was emphatic. It was in the wire-to-wire number one team since we started the CFP. Get it. Got it. That one performance was fantastic. But Michigan's put together like 4 of those in a row.
Yep.
And dominated Ohio State. We weren't quite as high on Ohio State's offense as we were the Georgia defense, but it was close. And Michigan dominated them in every facet, which is why I thought Michigan was a deserving number one. And I thought from a credibility wouldn't be having this conversation about is the committee thinking about rematches if Alabama was two. And look, the metrics weren't all that far off from Michigan being number one either. Like, they're right behind Alabama in strength of record. From a defensive standpoint, they're pretty high up in terms of defensive efficiency and relative scoring and all that stuff. So I'm not mad at it. It's not something that's worth like going into over and over and over, because now Alabama gets Cincinnati, which is basically a cakewalk into the championship game. But I thought that Michigan should have been like, they made it seem like it was a done deal, like there was no doubt. But I thought Michigan should have been heavily considered to be number one.
Okay. Well, here's
Which, by the way, like you can't talk smack about Michigan anymore.
No, I mean I've been wrong about Michigan quite a few times, actually. You're welcome.
Not before this year.
Yeah,
you've been pretty right. I've been wrong about Michigan before this year.
Yeah, listen, Michigan fans, you're welcome that I keep fading you and y'all keep winning games. So props on being in the CFP. You are a touchdown underdog against Georgia in Miami. We're going to talk about the games because we got, what, 3.5 weeks to kind of break these down. But I would like to get your perspective, Roddy, on, like, if you're Georgia, and we've talked about, look, this is your best chance to win a national championship. You've got the goods. You've got the roster. You've got the talent. You've got the depth. All right, well, you've been humbled pretty bad by Bama. Not only did you lose the game, but you had a chance to knock out maybe the biggest threat to you in the CFP, right? Like, if Georgia wins that game, they don't have to see Bama. They don't have to worry about those guys in the Final Four. What adjustments are you making, man? Because I've heard a lot of talk from a lot of Georgia fans about quarterback over the last couple of days.
It's too late.
Okay.
It's too late to change your quarterback, in my opinion.
Why?
Because you've rolled with Stetson this far.
I understand.
You've consistently stood by Stetson. And if you want to do it, like,
You got 3.5 weeks.
Yeah. When's the last time JT Daniels played a meaningful snap? And you're going to roll with him against Michigan?
Don't matter, man. They should remember how they got beat the last time they were in the national championship.
I agree.
Because Saban had the stones to make a change.
Well, but that was Tua. Like, JT Daniels ain't Tua.
He's a five-star guy from California. I mean, I'm just saying. Listen.
Who got replaced at his last. But let's not forget, JT Daniels got benched at USC.
He got benched by Clay Helton, though. Turned out to be a complete Nimrod.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm not saying that JT Daniels is a better player. Like, I'm not in practice like the coaches are. Like, they know what they see. They know who's a better quarterback, who's a better commander of the offense. But Stetson didn't play very well, man.
No. And look, if you are bringing Stetson Bennett into this college football playoff, you're bringing a knife to a gunfight. Like, you are. And that could be said for any college football playoff. Let's look at the national champions in the college football playoff era, okay? Alabama last year, who's their quarterback? Mac Jones, first-round pick. Mm-hmm. LSU the year before, who's their quarterback? Joe Burrow, number one overall pick. Clemson before that, Trevor Lawrence, number one overall pick. Alabama year before that, Tua Tagovailoa, number one draft pick, first round pick. By the way, they had Jalen Hurts too, who was a second round pick. Clemson year before that, who's their quarterback? Deshaun Watson. What was he? First round pick. Alabama year before that, who was their quarterback? I actually don't know. I forgot.
It was Jalen.
Blake Sims.
No, they won it with Jalen, didn't they?
They wanted Jalen the first time?
I'm pretty sure.
15? I can't remember.
They won it with O.J. Howard, but yeah, Jalen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know. The Wikipedia is not telling me. No, it was Blake Sims. Blake Sims.
Was it?
Oh, wait. Okay. Notable departures from the 2014 squad. Eligible for... I don't know. This is very unclear.
I think it was Jalen.
Oh, yeah. No. It's Jalen. You're right. Jalen Hurts. Again, point. Boom. And then the year before that, it was Ohio State with a third-string Cardale Jones, who was the first-round pick. So, like, you're not winning it with Stetson Bennett, bro. You're not. So I think you have to. I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because I said it's too late to make the change to JT Daniels. But you also have to, because I don't think switching to JT Daniels is a successful model at this time. I just don't. Like, coaches will tell you all the time, you have to take the reps. You got to practice. And JT Daniels isn't one of those dudes that's just going to come in there and start slinging it and have the Tua magic. Like, we've never seen it from him before. So we've seen a lot of JT Daniels. Plus, he'll probably break when you sneeze on him. However, you can't win it with Stetson Bennett. So what do you do? I don't know.
I don't know either. I think it's fascinating. We found out, you know, after the fact, Kirby Smart was like, at no point did we even consider putting JT Daniels in on Saturday.
So JT Daniels must suck then, bro. Be terrible.
Look, I haven't heard the specific, like, what's going on behind the scenes. But I mean, I was in that press box on Saturday, and everybody else has heard things about JT Daniels in Athens. And so I'm wondering, like, is he,
what are the things? Like, I don't know.
Is he checked out? Like, is he just, like, mentally, is it not there? Does he not want to play? Is he not healthy? Is he in the portal? Does he have one foot in the portal?
Like, what's going on? This is as weird as the Jamie Newman stuff last year, too. Like,
well, you got to figure this out. This is the position that Kirby hasn't figured out. You got to figure this out, man.
You are exactly right. And for we are starting to talk about Kirby as if he's in the upper echelon of college football. You're not in the upper echelon of college football until you get this decision right. Saban got it right. Dabo's gotten it right. Lincoln's gotten it right. I mean, Urban Meyer obviously did an excellent job with his at Ohio State. You got to figure out how to manage the quarterback position, because this is this would be the second time he's got a national championship level team and the more talented guy under center sitting on the bench. Now, for a different reason, but like, you sat Justin Fields for Jake from State Farm and lost in the national championship game. Now, did Jake from State Farm, is he the reason you lost? No. Devontae Smith's the reason you lost. However, maybe had you decided to make the change earlier, like Dabo did with Trevor, you have that thing rolling by the time you get to the playoff so that it's not a 23-26 ball game in overtime.
Right.
Maybe you put up 30 on Alabama in regulation because you have a guy that can make plays off schedule. And so, I don't know, man.
Well, and again, like, we're going to spend 3.5 weeks breaking down Georgia and Michigan. That's not a phenomenal matchup for Georgia.
Like, no, it's not.
I mean, lines of scrimmage for Michigan, they can compete with you.
Yep.
Like, they will get after your ass, although, and they will sack you.
I would argue that, like, yeah, I think Michigan's defensive line is going to have success against Georgia. The thing that Georgia that would make me nervous as a Georgia fan is I look at that Michigan defense and I think, holy hell, how are we going to get to 20?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like, Georgia's best offensive player, Roddy, is a freshman tight end.
He's really good, though.
He's very good.
And George Pickens will be more healthy at that point, so maybe he's. But again, you need a quarterback to
throw it to.
Who's throwing
the ball? Yeah, let's talk. Correct. What do you got? What do you got, Serbs?
I think these teams are a carbon copy of one another.
I don't disagree, and that's why, like, if you're Georgia, you're kind of scared that, like, hey, can we get to 20 on Michigan's defense? But I would say Michigan's saying the same thing, and Georgia's got better players.
Right.
But Georgia has better players than Michigan.
Yeah.
On the whole. Yeah. Like, the best player in the game is going to be playing on Michigan's football team. Maybe the best two. But you go down the line, and in the top 10, you're probably taking 7 Georgia guys.
Who are the best two players in the game?
Aiden Hutchinson's the best player. And then the other defensive end for Michigan's the other best player.
Okay. Interesting.
I thought
no
you
Jordan
were
going to
say Hassan Haskins.
Okay. Interesting.
Or Blake Corum.
No, Hassan Haskins
it'll be
is nice.
To see,
I guess
it'll
player.
Be interesting. It'll be super interesting. Like, what you just said, the whole line of scrimmage, I think both teams are going to struggle to run that ball the way they have all season long. Like, it's going to come down to either the defense is making, like, a big play, scoring points on defense, a special team scoring on, or it's going to come down to, like, Cade McNamara and Stetson Bennett.
Yikes. Here's the thing.
See, I don't think there's any way it comes down to that. I think it comes down
But
who feels here's the thing. Who feels more comfortable playing in a game that's played in the teens?
I mean, Georgia's played in one game outside of Clemson that's been, like, up in the air in the second half. It was Saturday, and they caught that L. Right? Like, I'm just saying, like
Michigan is born of the teens' life, molded by it. Like, the Michigan's going to turn this into a Big Ten football game, and Georgia's going to be like, wait a minute, Jesus, where are the points? And Michigan's like, yeah, where are the points?
Yeah, I don't think this is a great matchup for Georgia. And you zoom out, and you went from this thing went from a coronation party to a crapshoot, like, real quick. Like, it's not a given. I know it's a 2-game season, right? But, like, man, like this is it's not a given that you're getting to the Natty. Like Michigan is, they're going to pack that place in Florida too. It's going to be a 50-50 crowd.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be their Super Bowl. They, look, like Georgia, Michigan has not been here in a long time.
Yep,
it's basically
Georgia North.
Like, correct. Yeah, Michigan, underachieved. Lost to Big Brother.
Just as big a fan base, just as rabid. Like, it's been a long time since they have that success. Not as long as Georgia, but a long time that they've had that since they've had that success. Like, yeah.
I think it's a great game. I don't know what Georgia does, but I know mentally, like we tuned in just for fun on Sunday morning to some Georgia stuff on the ride back, and those folks are insufferable. Like, and yep. I mean, the table has turned very quickly.
And, like, I think mentally for Georgia, the football team, this could be a really good thing for them.
Yeah.
If you do not focus on the fact that you are playing Alabama in the national championship game.
Right. Yeah, you got to watch that out.
Correct. The thought process can't be revenge on Alabama. It's got to be, it's going to be our rock fight. Let's bring our best rocks. And I think, I mean, Georgia, I'm not saying Georgia's going to lose. I don't know. We'll have to look at it over the next month. Georgia's got a really good shot to win. They're the more talented team across the board, except for at a couple of positions. But if you were to ask me which team's playing with more confidence right now, it's Michigan.
Yeah.
Which team likes each other more?
Yeah.
It's Michigan. which team is not that Georgia doesn't like that Georgia defense feels like it's really close, but if I'm on that Georgia defense, I'm looking at Stetson Bennett, and if I'm Stetson Bennett, I'm looking at that Georgia defense like, bro, what, 421? You could like 421, bro.
Yeah, so pretty wild. I mean, great atmosphere at the Benz, it always is, but I mean, stunned faces. Like there were not a lot of Alabama fans there. There were about 25,000-30,000. But I mean, in terms of the stadium, probably 70-30 at least. Yeah. Right?
And I was deep in enemy territory at a friend's house. If you go to a friend's house to watch the SEC championship game, like, you know, they're Georgia fans, deep in enemy territory. And let's just say it was nice and quiet in the second half. Like, it was peaceful. I could watch Cincinnati and Houston, like, watch a little bit of that, see that.
You give the Bearcats no chance.
Absolutely not. We have been treating Cincinnati with kid gloves the entire season. And, like, people are all complaining about, oh, well, they're winning their games. Why are you guys being so hard on Cincinnati and who they've and how they've played, and they need style points and yada, yada, yada. You know why? Because if Alabama played that schedule and they beat Houston 35-20, we'd be like, what's wrong with Bama? Correct? If Georgia played Houston in a championship game and they beat Houston 35-20, we'd be like, are they vulnerable? That's the conversation we'd be having. If you could only put up 35 points against Eastern Carolina, if you're Michigan, we'd be like, oh man, they're okay. If you're in a one-score game against Tulsa and Navy in 2 of 3 weeks, and you're one of the college football playoff teams, and that, like, we are sounding alarms. People are jumping off bridges to try and figure out what's going on. But with Cincinnati, we've just excused it. They're winning their games. Just look at them play. Dominance on the line of scrimmage. They look like that. They do not look like that. We have to start talking about Cincinnati like we talk about Alabama. So take what Cincinnati has done against those teams and think about, if Alabama had done that, what would you say?
Right. I don't think that's a fair comparison. Like,
why is that not a fair comparison? They are in the college football playoff
you
now.
You can't compare. You can't
it's
compare.
It's the only comparison we can make.
I'm talking about the Alabama part of this, bro. Like, that's
what?
That's because everything about Alabama is different.
They're playing Alabama.
No, I understand. You're talking about the way they've been perceived, the way they've been treated.
Right. But same thing with Georgia, same thing with Michigan, same thing with Clemson, same thing with Oklahoma, same thing with all these places.
No, man. Those are different. Like,
Ohio State?
Look, I hear what you're saying. I understand what you're like. Cincinnati does not, they're not in that, just like, they're not Georgia, they're not Oklahoma, they're not Clemson, they're not Michigan. Correct. They're not Correct. Ohio State.
Correct.
They are the team that has had two straight undefeated regular seasons.
Against terrible competition.
Look, Michigan was not in the preseason top 25. Cincinnati started the season in the preseason top 10.
Right, because we have these people that are like, oh, they've been undefeated for so long. Give them their respect. Are they a good team? Absolutely. Are they a top 10 team? Very possibly. Probably, actually. But if you anonymously polled, college football coaches, top 10 teams that they would not play, like number one, least likely to play or least want to play, down to number 10, and they're all good teams, but like rank them. Where do you think Cincinnati ends up?
I mean, probably, I don't know, probably 10. Right,
I don't know about 10, but yeah, they're especially in a bowl game, they're below Ole Miss because Ole Miss will be healthy. They're below Ohio State for sure. They're below probably Utah and Baylor at this point because of the way they're playing. Maybe not Baylor. I don't know where they'd fall with Oklahoma State, but I can assure you they're like 7. And if they're 7, like, bro, they don't stand a chance against Alabama.
Right. Well,
they could.
Go ahead, sirs.
They could potentially screw this up for the rest of the group of five teams. Like,
if they get blown out?
Yeah, man. Like, they've been given the benefit of the doubt all season long. We backed ourselves into a corner by having to include them, basically by having them ranked so high early on. Like, UCF never did this because they didn't get a top 10 preseason ranking. And, like, all we're really hanging our hat on with Cincy is the Notre Dame win. Like, otherwise, there's nothing different about this team than those undefeated UCF teams. Like,
I will say this year, though, like, I understand the frustration and, Roddy, you and the rest of these, like, you and Wayne are in the same boat where it's like, man, just walk away from the television. Turn the radio down. Like, stop feeding at the trough and being so offended by what, like, Joey Galloway and Jesse Palmer tell you how to think about college football. I'm not saying you do that. I'm just saying, like, you think ESPN doesn't have, you know, motives here? Like, come on. Like, they run the whole damn thing. Here's my point, though, with Cincy. I hear you, like, the frustration, you know, the sob story, the narrative, blah, blah, blah. This year, though, come on. Who else are we putting in?
Yeah, I mean, this year, fine. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, you're not putting Notre Dame there because they beat them head-to-head at Notre Dame's place.
Yeah,
you're not putting Baylor in there. You're not putting Ohio State. You're not putting Ole Miss. You're not, you know what I mean? Like, this year, they're here. They're there. And they're two touchdown underdogs against Bama. Roll Tide.
And that's the unfortunate thing about this year. And this is the first year where I felt like 4 ain't enough because and the only reason is because the fourth team isn't good enough to be with the other three. Like, I think, like, while you can't put those other teams in, I think all those other teams give Bama a better game than Cincinnati's going to.
Right.
Yeah.
Or look, could even beat Bama.
And the argument.
Like, all those other teams, I think, could potentially upset Alabama. 0% chance, to me, based on what I've seen, that Cincinnati could beat them or even hold a candle to them. Like, this is going to be ugly.
So the interesting thing, the line that people are going to try and toe leading up to this game is the Alabama deserved to be the number one team in the country line based on what we saw at Georgia, and then subsequently saying, but they're not going to blow out Cincinnati. Like, that is the line that people are going to try and toe. And listen for it. Listen for it. Because you're going to hear, look at how Alabama looked. Bryce Young, Heisman Trophy candidate, Jameson Williams, first round pick, yada, 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 yada. And then they're going to turn and say, this Cincinnati team's got a shot. Excuse me? A week ago, we thought Georgia was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Alabama just thoroughly dispensed of them. Saban's teams don't come out flat in these games, with the exception of Clemson in the national championship game where they got blown out. And then the other thing that people are going to tell you about Cincinnati is, oh, but they got pros. What? That works in the American, but bro, you're playing Bama now. I don't care if you got two first round picks at corner. Bama's got four. Two of them sitting on the bench. Like, so we're going to hear a lot about Sauce Gardner and what's the other corner's name? I can't remember the other corner's name right now. I'm blanking. But we're going to hear a lot about Desmond Ridder and these cornerbacks and the secondary and all this stuff and like how they're going to hold up against Jameson Williams in this Alabama receiving core. And it's like, bro, I just saw what Jameson Williams did to Kelee Ringo, who is a five-star, and Darion Kendrick, who a lot of people feel like is a first-round talent. It's not like Jameson Williams hasn't played a first-round corner this year.
Right.
Like, this dude isn't the best corner in the – so I just think we try and have the – since we try and sell Cincinnati in a way that doesn't make sense when you compare them to who their peers are right now. There's no more comparing Cincinnati and their five pro prospects to Tulane, like, yeah, who doesn't have a single one. You got to compare them to Alabama, who's got five on the offensive line.
I agree with you, Roddy, but again, man, like, counterpunch. How many undefeated teams are there in FBS football this year?
One.
Thank you. Like, I'm not saying Cincinnati is in the same echelon of all those other.
Go undefeated with that schedule?
Listen,
how many SEC teams go undefeated with that schedule?
It's a one season sample size.
Alabama.
Like, you look at this,
Georgia,
in a vacuum. Like that's all this is, man. Nobody's
probably
saying,
Mississippi State.
You're the one who's taking this to a place that you've chosen to take it. Like, appreciate
Kentucky,
Cincinnati, or hate on Cincinnati for what they've done this year.
But you keep throwing out undefeated, like. Like, it means
what else?
Something.
What the hell else are you supposed to do, Roddy?
It does mean something.
What the hell else are you
supposed to go undefeated?
Okay.
And then nice. And look, I'm not saying Cincinnati shouldn't have gotten in this year. Like, it's a tired argument. I just want people to realize, like Serber said, there's not that much difference between these Cincinnati teams and like the UCF team that we saw, whatever, 4 years ago or whatever.
Right. The difference
is. Go back and look at that UCF team. Like,
yes,
it had pros too.
Sure. But the difference is that this year of our Lord 2021, the CFP door was open, and Cincinnati handled their business and walked through it. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Look.
And all I'm saying is,
do they deserve,
nice story, Cincinnati.
Do they deserve to be here? Yes or no?
In my opinion, no.
Okay, so then you have to tell me who goes instead of them.
Baylor.
Wow. Okay.
Utah. Pick one.
Three-loss team in Utah. Or two-loss team in Baylor, who lost to
team
a sub-500
TCU team. That won one game, that lost one game the rest of the way, playing as well as anybody in the country. Yes. Just whooped the most talented team in the Pac-12.
Twice. Yes.
Whooped them.
Yeah. Okay, so we can just throw September out the window then. That stuff doesn't matter. It's not about how you start.
But when you're comparing it to the, like, if UTSA had gone undefeated, would we be having the same argument? The American wasn't that much better than Conference USA this year. The only difference is they've got a win over Notre Dame, and I'm not taking that away from them. I'm not saying that they're like UTSA. Like,
hey,
they are a better team than UTSA.
You kind of are taking it away from them, but that's
okay. No, I'm not.
No, that's okay.
No, I'm not.
It's fine.
What I'm saying is, like, if this is validation, okay, that's fine. What I want to be known is that, like, there are two different types of football that we play in college football. There's Power 5 football, and then there's everybody else.
Right.
And Cincinnati might be very good. But when they're in the Big 12, like, they are not going to go undefeated in the Big 12.
Right.
Even with this team this year, they would not have gone undefeated in the Big 12.
Yeah.
So,
you know what's
just
funny?
Want you to – Cincinnati, like, they got in the easy way. They pressed the easy button, and they got in.
Yeah, road game at Notre Dame. Yeah, easy button.
This year's One Notre game. Dame team wasn't that tough.
Especially at that time. Later in the year, okay, sure. At that time, they were kind of struggling a little bit.
Barely.
Notre Dame, Notre Dame played a tougher schedule because they had to have actual ACC teams that have like 300-pounders on a week-in, week-out basis.
Most of those ACC teams went 6-6, by the way. Just
Most of the ACC teams went 6-6.
Yeah, but if they went 6-6 in the ACC, stick them in the American and they go 11-1.
Especially with the offenses that they played. There weren't even good offenses in the American this year.
Guys, I hear you, but that's not how this shit works.
No, it is. For the history of college football, this is how that shit has worked. You go undefeated in the American, and good luck. Enjoy the Fiesta Bowl, which is how God intended it.
Not
when
this year.
Built the conferences.
Not this year, bro. Not this year. Like, I get, okay. Like, listen, you can get your blood pressure up because Cincinnati's here. And they're going to get smoked by Alabama, just like Alabama has smoked everybody else except for Ohio State in CFP
semis.
It does sound like
I am...
You mad, bro.
I'm mad. I'm not mad.
You mad. You sound mad.
I'm not mad that Cincinnati's there. I'm mad about the way that we have been talking about Cincinnati.
Yeah, but that's your decision to digest that stuff, man.
Do you read anything? Like, this is how college football talks about. And it's not just ESPN. And there are some level heads on ESPN. But it's not just ESPN. It's all the bleeding hearts in the national media writing stories about how Cincinnati finally broke through the glass ceiling and how Cincinnati's been screwed and the Group of Five been screwed for so long. And it's not just one person. Like, it's a lot. And we justify it in these ways that's like, well, they have won all their games. Yes, they played one score games against Navy and Tulsa in a 3-week span. We would not have accepted that from Alabama. Yes, they've got pro prospects, but so does everyone in every other league. Okay, how many pro prospects, how many NFL draft picks did the SEC have last year? Do you know?
Bro, I'm not Todd McShay.
How many?
I don't know, man.
65. You know how many the Big Ten had?
Half that.
44. Do you know how many the American had?
Half that.
Can't even find it. It's like 12. Like, yeah, that's the difference in the leagues, bro.
Yeah, I look.
Like, if
I
that's
get that.
The difference in the leagues, then I mean, how can you even take like
Roddy?
How can I then be like, hey, yeah, they're certainly validated. They had 19. American had 19 draft picks, 19 players drafted, and by the way, 1, 2, 3, 4 of those guys played on Cincinnati's team. So Cincinnati had to play 15 players that got drafted in the NFL draft last year.
I'm not.
Do you know how many Alabama had to play?
I feel like I'm having a Wayne Cook moment.
And that's just last year. This is just last year. Do you know how many Alabama had to play?
Go ahead.
Alabama had 10 guys drafted, which means they had to play 55 guys that got drafted or go through a league that had 55 guys, 40 more guys. Just last year's draft, and then you do that for this year's draft and next year's draft and do it for like the next 3 years. And like Alabama's having to play like 100 guys that get drafted. Cincinnati's having to play like 30. All right, I'm done.
Okay, good. I'm not saying that the AAC greater than Pac-12 or greater than Big 12. It's not what I'm saying.
Pac-12 had 28 guys drafted.
What I am saying is that the Pac-12 and Big 12 conferences over the course of 13 weeks.
Big 12 had 22.
Both shit the bed.
I agree.
ACC this year.
So if Oklahoma State had won,
yes.
Do you think they get in over?
I think we've got a situation.
Do you think they get in over Cincinnati?
Yeah, probably. I think they would put a 12-1 Big 12 champ over 13-0 Cincy.
I don't think they would have. I think they should.
You don't think five would have jumped four in that scenario?
I don't think so, because like the thing would have been what changed a top 10 win.
Multiple
Trump's a top 25
wins.
Win.
Multiple. For Oklahoma champion. State down the stretch, having beaten Oklahoma, having beaten
right.
Baylor. Yeah,
but
I think
one
that
would have
gotten
wins,
it done.
But all that stuff was already baked into the record, to the ranking that we saw before the championship game. So the only thing that would have been added is top 10 win on one side, top 25 win on the other side. Big 12 championship, American championship. So is that top 10 win of those 15 spots – or 13 spots, or whatever it was, is that enough to vault you over a team that coming into the week you thought was better?
Can I do something real quick?
Sure.
I'm going to exclude one game from each of these schedules. I'm going to lay them out for you and the result, and you tell me why one deserves to get in over the other.
I like this game.
Starting with the first team. Win over FIU 61-17. Win over Memphis 40-13. Win over Cincinnati 51-23. Win over ECU 63-21. Win over Navy 31-21. Win over Austin Peay 73-33. Win over SMU 31-24. Win over UConn 49-24. Win over Temple 45-19. Win over USF 49-42, win over Memphis 62-55. The other team, win over Miami of Ohio 49-14, win over Murray State 42-7, win over Indiana 38-24, win over Temple 52-3, win over UCF 56-21, win over Navy 27-20, win over Tulane 31-12, win over Tulsa 28-20, win over USF 45-28, win over SMU 48-14, win over ECU 35-13, win over Houston 35-20. Which one of those teams deserves to get in over the other, and why?
So we're talking about 2017 UCF versus 2021 Cincinnati, right?
They are. It's the exact same. Replace the Notre Dame win with the Maryland win.
And the American was better in 2017 because Memphis was a really good football team.
Explain to me why it makes any sense in the world that Cincinnati has any business in this college football playoff. The group of five is not supposed to make this thing. It's the Notre Dame win, but that's such bullshit,
man. No. I don't disagree with you.
It's the bullshit of the narrative that's been created the entire we've never let a two-loss team in. Well, why don't we? Why not? Because I'm telling you right now, if you stick Cincy in any of the situations that those two-loss teams are in, they lose two games too.
You guys are angry, man.
The public
because Cincy
public
doesn't belong. We're so going to see a 45-13 snooze fest.
So who are you going to put in
the freaking Cotton Bowl?
You want two lost
Baylor in?
Okay,
100% put Baylor.
You don't think they get smoked?
100% put Utah in.
I don't think Utah would get smoked. I don't think that one bit.
Well, here's the thing, Utah. Maybe you don't start the season 1-2. I'm just saying, man, look.
Dealing with Utah, you're dealing with tragedy. You haven't figured out your quarterback position.
I'm not saying they need to be penalized for dealing
with... Teams get
with,
better over the course
with
of the year,
loss
Steven.
...of players because of gunshot
Did I sound
wounds.
Like Wayne? Did I sound like Wayne?
No, you've sounded like Wayne a lot today, but not because of that.
Look.
Look, hang on a
this,
second.
This there, was the there, year. This was the year
an,
for Cincinnati.
There has been a growing appetite for inclusion in college football, right? Like I'm
No,
not,
there hasn't.
Yeah,
no, there hasn't. Nope.
There has nope. been a groundswell nope. of nope. support.
Only
for
there's
Wayne.
Been a growing
Wayne
appetite.
Wayne is the only guy.
You're saying, hang on a second. You're saying there's not a groundswell of support for expanding the CFP? Is that what you're saying isn't happening?
It's there, not to include American teams, though.
Okay,
no,
well, that's wrong.
There is a growing appetite in college football for someone else. Because if we got four teams that we had never seen before in the CFP, I think it calms the temperature of this expansion talk down. Maybe not significantly, but somewhat. The fact that we got Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, absolutely Ohio State dominating the college football playoff bids, that is what I think has driven people. People want something different. Do they want inclusion? Yes, that's part of it. The people that want inclusion is the people that are left out. Like, Alabama fans aren't clamoring for inclusion. Clemson fans have not been clamoring for inclusion.
This isn't about fans. This is about commissioners. This is about university presidents, athletic directors.
Who's driving
these
it?
People.
Again, the ACC is not sitting there in those meetings saying, hey, we need more people in the CFP.
So
Greg Sankey's the only reason Greg Sankey's saying is so he can get more money. He's like, look, we get four teams.
So 20 years from now, we're talking about the glory days of a four-team CFP, the way we're talking about a two-team BCS now? Is that the thought process?
Yes.
Okay.
People will be like, man, you remember when it meant something to make the playoff? We got 24 teams that make it now.
It's interesting. Because
You don't
I still,
think we will?
I still
we romance, like We romance bowl games, like when national champions didn't even play each other. And the winner of the Sugar Bowl, who didn't play the winner of the Rose Bowl, they were voted against each other on who's going to be. And sometimes it happened before the bowl games. We romance that. Oh, you remember when bowl games meant something? Yeah, back in the early 80s, that was fantastic. Wait, decided national champions on paper, and you're mad about us arguing over who the number four team is?
So you'd be like, okay. Bro, so you want Bama, Michigan right now? Like, I mean, the whole, like, everybody else can just go to hell? Like, that's what you're saying?
If we got Bama, Michigan right now,
yeah,
I'd be completely fine with that. Because you know what? Like you just said, Georgia, you should have won the SEC championship.
Okay.
Game.
All right. So Alabama being 5.5 feet under during the Iron Bowl and being this close to not even being in the CFP and now being the number one seed, like, you're good with it. Just lock it in. Bama,
I told
Michigan,
you that Michigan
Natty,
should have been the number one seed.
Everybody else can go to hell.
I told you Michigan should have been the number one seed. Man. And I'm not like you're sort of twisting my argument a little bit. My thing is there has not been a clamoring for inclusion. There has been a clamoring from individual fan bases or commissioners or whatever, constituents to get the parties that they are interested in. And they can't do it on the field. So let's expand the playoff. We want that because people want to see something different. Like, what would the matchups be this year? Because I can promise you, whoever Pitt's playing, like, no one's clamoring to see Pitt play anybody in this. And I love Pitt. I think they're a really good football team. But, like, that's not moving the needle in college football. That's not what people are clamoring for. People are clamoring for a way that their interested parties can get in. The parties that they are interested in. And they're tired of seeing Alabama. Who's going to win the damn thing no matter how many people you put in?
And there it is. And there it is. Boys, I hate to cut this conversation short, but I have to be on a phone call in 4 minutes to talk about Western Kentucky in the Boca Raton Bowl. That's a real thing. I didn't make that up. Not my decision that Western Kentucky is playing a bowl game and hosting Louisville in the biggest men's basketball game of the year, and they decided to do it on the same day. Welcome to college athletics. Yeah, wow. Phenomenal.
I kind of blacked out the last 20 minutes. So
yeah, because you, I don't know what you were talking about. You hate Cincinnati. You want them all to go to hell. You think a two-loss conference champ from a Power 5 team should be in their place.
I think all those things. You don't have to be frustrated.
They're all going to catch a whooping, bro. It does not matter.
I want to distill it all back to this. So it does matter because you get to put college ball playoff appearance next to your name, and going through a big boy conference is different. I've played those group of five teams. Not a Cincinnati-type team, but I've played the entire schedule that Cincinnati played. I know who those teams are. I was on the field with them. I get it. Do they have some good players? Yes. Are they good? No. Like, we weren't overly talented by the time I left, and we would roll those teams consistently. The thing that I want to make clear about Cincinnati is you can no longer make the same you can no longer evaluate them the way we have been evaluating them. Evaluate them against their peers, and their peers are now Alabama, Georgia, and Michigan. So think to yourself when you talk about their schedule and how they've looked, how would I have evaluated Alabama if they looked like this against those teams? How would I evaluate Alabama if they were rolling out with five guys I thought were going to get drafted this year? I would be saying, the hell is wrong with Alabama?
Hey, real quick before we sign off, let's just put this out there. Miami coach Manny Diaz has been informed he has been let go.
We've come full circle. Wow. By the way,
official.
Okay, very good.
Or maybe it's not official. Bruce Feldman. He's
Bruce
got a
Feldman's
blue check. That makes
job.
It pretty damn official, right?
Yep.
Well, there you go. It's approaching 11 a.m. Eastern time, and here we are.
I said it was going to be 11 o'clock. Bruce Feldman's good at his job. Bruce Feldman typically doesn't miss. So, and David Hale also tweeted out, can confirm officially Miami has officially parted ways with Manny Diaz. That's – wow.
Man, how about the
three? Mario's going. That was only happening if Mario was coming, correct?
Yeah, Mario's coming. Yeah,
they got their guy. Yep. Well, so he's there. And the Pac-12 has another massive vacancy on the heels of Southern Cal and Washington that is now open.
The three biggest programs in the Pac-12 changing coaches this offseason.
Yeah,
not arguable.
Sure.
I don't think that's arguable at all.
Well,
I think Utah would have something to say about that. Stanford would have something to say
about it. You know what, Utah fans, come after me. Stanford's been irrelevant for 15 years. Five years. They're not as big a brand.
The North runs through Palo Alto. They'll tell you that.
By the way, Utah, congrats on your first Rose Bowl ever. That's a big deal, okay? And it doesn't have to be you that gets an ass whooping by Alabama. Instead, it's going to be Cincinnati.
Yes, agreed.
Or so these two guys think. I haven't locked in my decision yet. You got to come back for that in about 3 weeks.
You're just playing contrarian.
Steven, you're an SEC guy. You're an SEC guy. You're going to pick Alabama. You're going to take the point. I mean, you're going to lay the points.
Y'all tune in Wednesday for the Wayne show when he says Bama by 50.
Y'all got to come back for my pick a little bit later, okay? Good stuff, boys. I'm glad that we could get you fired up. I appreciate the candor and the discourse today. I mean, ripe.
Dude, I cannot believe Miami just did this to Manny.
Sturdy.
Is he going to go back to Temple? They need a coach, right?
Wow.
They do. Damn, that's tough.
He's a former Temple coach.
Sorry, I know you have to get on a call. What Miami just did is I don't even know what the words are.
The inmates are running the asylum? How about that? How about that?
No, it's like the warden making decisions on the toilet paper without, it's probably not the best.
I mean, look, Miami's a private school.
Poop at the prison. I get it.
They've got the funds. They can do whatever the hell they want, and they're doing it. Yeah. Mario's coming home. You said it earlier.
Is Cristobal an upgrade?
Yeah.
Is he a significant upgrade?
I don't know yet. I'm not convinced that Cristobal is a phenomenal game management guy.
He's not.
He is a phenomenal recruiter. And he understands the importance of, like, trying to do it the SEC way on the lines of scrimmage. Like, he gets that.
Good luck.
In terms of X's and O's, like in-game stuff, go back and look at the Stanford game a couple years ago. I don't think he's a home run.
Well, he just took the most talented team in the Pac-12 and got his ass whooped by Utah twice. Like, ass whooped by Utah twice.
Yeah.
And they are the most talented team in the Pac-12. And they got blown out twice. So
he also hitched his wagon to Anthony Brown. All right, we gotta go. For Roddy Jones, for Michael Serber, I'm Stephen Hartzell. I gotta hop on a call and talk tops.